That's 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Darielle Aldinger. A powerful tornado ripped a deadly path through tiny Greenfield, Iowa, reducing homes to rubble and tossing cars about like toys.
We do believe we have everybody accounted for, but we just want to make sure that with our search efforts, obviously this tornado has devastated a good portion of this town and community. And with that much damage, we want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence and making sure that we do cover that area.
State Police Sergeant Alex Tinkla. Rudy Giuliani has pleaded not guilty to 9 felony charges. The former New York City mayor is accused of trying to overturn Donald Trump's 2020 election loss in Arizona. The former president's lawyers have rested their case in his hush money trial after calling just 2 witnesses. Closing arguments are expected next Tuesday. The Justice Department suing Oklahoma over a law which makes it a crime to live in that state without legal immigration status. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The newest prosecutor in the Wisconsin Attorney General's office is funded by a foundation fighting climate change. The Journal Sentinel reports Karen Heineman's $90,000 salary is covered by the State Energy and Environmental Impact Center at New York University Law School. It was set up to fight efforts to roll back environmental protections under the law. Bird flu has infected dairy herds in other parts of the country, but so far not Wisconsin. Experts are worried now that one person in Texas was infected. Andrew Pecos is with Johns Hopkins University.
Given that dairy farms have a large number of people who can come in contact with infected cows, there is an increased chance of the H5N1 virus also directly infecting humans.
Experts recommend sticking with pasteurized dairy products. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Are you ready to hit a home run with your business marketing? It's time to step up to the plate and get noticed with help from your local MVP senior account executive, Peter Van Doren. Whether you're a rookie or seasoned pro, I'm here to help you score big with unbeatable radio advertising and digital marketing solutions. Don't wait until the 9th inning. Get started now, and let's hit a grand slam together. Contact me by email today, peter@civicmedia.us.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I want to start off with Singapore Air. Evidently, Singapore Air had a really good year. In fact, so good that they wanted to reward their employees. Evidently, the airline reported a record annual net profit of $1.98 billion. A 24% increase over the previous year. Now, this Singapore Air, they were named the world's best airline by Skytrax World Airline Awards. And I guess it's the for the fifth time, last year, I guess this is what's happened. Their CEO said, hey, we want to reward our employees. And it got me thinking. I saw this. I'm going, wow, I wonder what Singapore Air is going to give their employees as a reward for doing, really hard work of earning their passengers' respect and doing a good job and all of this stuff. What are they going to get? Maybe a carry-on bag, maybe an attaboy or attagirl, maybe something, a little token of their appreciation. No. In fact, they got, according to CNN, each employee is going to get the equivalent of 6.65 months of pay, an additional 1.5 months pay for pandemic-related efforts. So you're looking at, what, over 8 months? Over 8 months of pay as a thank you for doing your job and doing a good job. And it got me to thinking, you know, what if that was an American company? What would they get? And it got me thinking about this. If you remember back in February, we talked about this Sephora company who evidently hit $10 billion in revenue, and they wanted to show their appreciation for their workforce. So did, you know, for getting to $10 billion in sales, did they give, you know, more than 8 months of salary as a bonus? No. No, silly. They got stale cookies. And not cookies, sorry. A stale cookie. I'm not making this up. Evidently, you know, once they hit this award, the mother office sent out a box filled with cookies to be shared and a note. Sent him a little card that said, "In this box, you will find a sweet treat to enjoy with your team. We thank you for making it our greatest year ever. Cheers." And of course, at the bottom of the card, it's been reported as saying, "The content of this card is confidential and should not be shared externally, as it is a violation of our company's policy." So if you shared the card that had the stale cookies in the box as a reward for hitting $10 billion in revenue, you could probably be fired. Welcome to America. And, you know, when people go, "Rick, why are you such a big supporter of unions?" Here's a start. Now, look, do I think every company who does really well as this Singapore Air, do I think every company is going to give that kind of a reward? No. No. But, you know, come contract time, when you sit down and you go, as an employer, you made 24% more off of our labor, we'd like some of it. To me, that's where you go with this. But understand, the sad reality is, you know, in this country where, you know, you've got, you know, four airlines that control 80% of the industry, they're still trying to figure out how to break up the unions they've got and cheat people out of wages and hold their costs down instead of going, "Hey, thank you for your work." But understand, it's just not airlines. I mean, we got, what is it? You know, four companies control almost 85%. Upwards of 85% of all the meat market. Three companies control, what, over 90% of the soda you drink. Three companies control, you know, almost three quarters of the cereal market. And you go, "But Rick, I don't hear this stuff." Yeah, because six companies control 90% of everything we see, hear, and read. Not shocking. You know, which is why the frame of, you know, inflation is all Joe Biden's fault is something that's brought through, because you've got a very robust right-wing media who will continue to repeat that frame. It's all Joe Biden. It's Bidenomics. It's easy. It's Bidenomics. It's Biden's fault. Without going, no, this is corporate greed at its finest. This is what happens when you consolidate industries. And, you know, three guys can go on a website and go, "Manufacturer's suggested retail price? We're just going to jack that up." Now, it's interesting because Mark Pocan, representative from Wisconsin, he has pointed out in a tweet, and we're going to have him on the program tomorrow to talk about this, that evidently there has been a CEO of an American oil company, his words, that got themselves caught colluding with a foreign oil-producing country, you know, Saudi Arabia, OPEC. And the idea is they're ripping off you and me, the consumers. They're jacking up the price because, yeah, it lines their pockets. And you go, "Well, how come no one's doing anything about it?" Well, because we don't have that investigative journalism we used to have in the past. And it's so much easier to just to blame Biden. It is. I mean, look, I love to do it too. It's all Biden's fault. That's the reason the cost of everything, you know, has gone up. No, it's because corporate America is going, "Hey, we can." And this is why I'm such a supporter of labor unions. One, we need wage increases to keep up with the cost of living. And two, hold these companies accountable. And we vote for people who are going to do that. Now, I'll tell you, over the weekend I did something that I'm kind of angry about. You know, our union decided, my Teamsters union decided, no, we're not going to lead the union. We're going to abdicate our responsibility, and we're going to have a straw poll of the members. Because understand, I do believe that Sean O'Brien wants to endorse Trump. Everything that I've seen coming out of this tells me that he wants to go in that direction. And I got to wonder, back when he made the pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago, what that conversation was about. Was there a quid pro quo? Maybe he's going to be Secretary of Labor if Trump wins. Who knows? Or maybe, and this is more likely my view, more likely the Republican Party believes that they're the party of working people, or they're trying to pivot to that. Now, the messaging part of it is one thing. The actions, quite clearly, they are not the party of the working class. Josh Hawley has said, we're the party of the working class. The future is us. And you go, no, you're not good at this. Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. So, I look at this in a moment where I do want to know what was said at Mar-a-Lago as a card-carrying Teamster. And we should, as unionists, want to know what kind of deals are being made, because I see O'Brien being used as the conduit to bring a union to the right politically. And to then go, look, we've got union support too. Now, will that stop them from being as bad as they were when they were in power? No, they're going to be as bad as they ever were, if not worse. And this is where, as a card-carrying Teamster, my concern is it weakens our ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Whatever that quid pro quo was, whatever that promise that Trump made to President O'Brien, whatever made him reach into the drive fund and give $45,000 to the RNC and give money to Josh Hawley, I would like to know. Because ultimately my concern is the Teamsters Union becomes part of the right-wing messaging of, well, we're not as anti-union as we are. Now you hear people, but Rick, what if they actually pull this off and we move the Republicans back in the direction of labor? And I go, that would be great. It's just not going to happen. There's this moment where you have to have reality check, where you have to go, no, they've shown us who they are. We just haven't believed them. So I got to tell you, the fact that they abdicated their responsibility tells me, look, either they want to endorse Trump or they don't want to endorse at all, which either way, still an endorsement for Trump. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last Thursday, the good folks at the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, and the Transportation Security Administration folks, TSA, had a little powwow, a little get-together, signing ceremony. They came to a tentative agreement on their collective bargaining agreement, so had an event where they came together, talked about, hey, what kind of an agreement did they come with? The greatly improved wages, organizing rights that are in this, what they're calling the most pro-worker contract in the agency's history. and here to share some thoughts on, well, what it took to get there, what it is, how it works, and how it benefits all of us. I've asked Dr. Everett Kelly to come talk with us. He's the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, their website. Dr. Kelly, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's good to be here, and thank you for having me.
So I'll steal a Bidenism. I hear this is kind of a big freaking deal.
To say the least, Rick.
So walk me through what makes this historic. What did you guys come together? What'd you get?
Well, first of all, you know, as you know, this has been a 20 years in the making. You know, when this administration, well, not this administration, rather, when this agency was formed, it was intended not to be a union agency.
Right.
It was intended to be private contractors, but the workers said no, AFGE said no. And so we won the right to organize the TSA back in 2010, 2011, you know, around that time frame. And, you know, so we've been working and working and working, trying to get a good contract. We've been working, trying to get some rights for TSA employees. And we finally had a signing ceremony on this past Thursday where we was able to accomplish that. And it's because of advocacy of the TSA workers that would not take no for an answer. It has to do with being consistent. It has to do with, you know, and I used this phraseology on last Thursday, and I'm going to use it again. It has to do with the we power, because when we come together, right, as an organization, as an entity, and exercise our unity, then we have power. And that's exactly what happened in this instance, right? Because TSA administration, the Biden administration, you know, and the workforce came together, in my opinion. And it wouldn't have ever happened, you know, probably had it not been for people in Congress, you know, especially Chairman Bennett Thompson, who has been an advocate for the TSA workforce, this administration, you know, that have been friendly to union members and to the administration as it relates to the Secretary of Homeland Security, the administrator of TSA, and all of the activists, Council 100, the staff from my office. I mean, everybody worked together along with the TSA administration to make this come to fruition. It's been great.
No, and it, from the outside, it looks like a win-win for both. But what's always been curious to me, Dr. Kelly, is I look at, you know, the frame coming out of the pandemic, this idea of essential workers, this idea of frontline heroes, if you will. And the TSA's been that. The people who are at our airports have been, you know, because of 9/11, were put there to keep us safe. And what's interesting to me is, you know, the people that we're calling frontline heroes, the people who are keeping us safe, why do we pay them so badly? I mean, this is the part that you know, I was reading that some of these TSA jobs are some of the lowest paid in government. You go, if their job is to keep us safe, if their job is to do all of these things, why do we treat them so poorly?
Well, sir, you know, you're exactly right. Now, I will say this. I'm very grateful of the fact that we just fought and got a 31% pay increase for the TSOs, okay? And that's just... I think it was June of last year, right? When we was able to really get that pay increase for the TSO. Prior to that, they was the worst paid federal employees ever. But this has been tremendous for these workers to get that increase and to get a contract, you know, simultaneously. Okay, so life has changed, if you will, for these federal employees, for this agency. Life has changed. You know, this contract and the historic pay increase that they have received has changed lives for these employees. And for that, I'm forever grateful.
You know, I think the frame here is the one that we use here on this program all the time. The idea of union job, better life. You got a collective bargaining agreement. These workers' lives are going to get better. Their pay is going to go up. Their benefits are going to get better. Their working conditions are going to be better. That, Absolutely. To me, is a frame that we have to, across industries, across technologies, across, you know, race lines, gender lines, everything. That frame, union job, better life, that's the thing I think that can unite us.
That's so true, you know. And you know, and the thing about this contract, too, is that, you know, ensure that, you know, it will carry this workforce into the future, right? Because prior to this contract, you know, there was no real way to address a grievance, you know, but this contract drives the future for these employees. When you start thinking in terms of, you know, uniform allowances, right, we expect these TSA agents to be professional, to be dressed apart every single day, right? And, you know, sometimes they would have to come out of their pocket because maybe, you know, they couldn't afford to have uniforms really readily available. So they might not look up to par in some instances. But, you know, now, because they've gotten an increase, I think $966 more, you know, for uniform allowances, these employees will be looking professional every single day. And I'm actually proud of that. That's one of the things that came out of this, right? But also the improved representation at the national and local level, right? The national will bargain the contract, but also there'll be local issues that will be addressed at the local level, which is a great thing for those employees because what affects one local in one particular area might not affect another. So this contract gives them the opportunity to bargain local issues, maybe something such as parking, right? Can you imagine? And this has been a real case in a lot of instances. Employees have to park and sometimes a mile away from the work site, you know? But now the fact that they'll be able to negotiate parking, you know, and those types of things at a local level, you know, could make a big difference in how, you know, they streamline out their paycheck every week, you know? Yeah.
No, it's an excellent point. Now, the question is, as you pointed out, this is a historic agreement. You're moving these jobs forward, this industry forward, all of these workers forward. And look, at the end of the day, you know, maybe I'm wrong in this, but I think that only happens in the political environment that we're in right now. In 6 months, we've got an election coming up. If things change, how vulnerable is this contract and this workforce to the changing winds of the politics of the president and the people that he puts into the positions who oversee the TSA?
Well, it's no doubt that, you know, a change in the presidency could make a difference, right? That's no doubt. You know, an executive order or anything could change. You know, just the mere fact that they change administrators could make a big difference. But what is so good about this particular contract is that, you know, it's binding for 7 years, okay? They signed this contract for a 7-year duration, and I'm grateful for that because, you know, it would be virtually impossible unless somebody decided, you know what, we're going to disregard this contract and it doesn't mean anything to us. You know, for 7 years, we have this contract.
Well, let me ask you that, Dr. Kelly, because the reality is, you know, I've been hearing a lot and we've been talking a lot about this Schedule F that President Trump has thrown out there, this idea that he's going to come in and if you're not loyal enough, I'm going to throw you to the curb. And you've got this Project 2025 that the Heritage Foundation is engaging in. It appears to me, and you can help me with this, I hope, that it appears to me we're going to bring patronage back again. And these are people who don't believe in unions or union contracts. So that's why I ask about the vulnerability part. Does that concern you?
Yeah, it does concern me, you know, because like I said, you know, it could be done away with just by sometime an executive order. And we know that the Heritage Foundation, the Project 2025, is not friendly to unions at all, not friendly to working people. I'm going to say this. In my opinion, it's not friendly to Americans because what it wants to do, you know, is totally destroy working America, you know, and just have the political appointees. And, you know, because the thing that's really scary is that, you know, on the first day, this report said that they want to do away with 50,000 federal employees right away and bring in 50,000 of the political appointees, you know, and that could be devastating for a union contract, that could be devastating for a lot of things. So it's very vulnerable in the next 6 months. If we do not elect the right person for president of the United States of America, the union as we know it could not be the same.
Well, look, our government will not be the same. What they're talking about is blind faith loyalty, returning to the days of patronage. And look, we know what Trump did during his 4 years. We know the kind of blind faith loyalty that he demands. And, well, you know, I don't know that that's good for democracy. I don't know that it's, you said it's not good for America. I agree. I don't know that it's good for the future of this country, which is why I think it's important to be talking about this, especially in the back, with the backdrop of signing this historic contract that we're excited about. This is good. This is moving people forward. This is making lives better. But one bad vote, I fear it goes.
It could set it back. It could set us all back, you know? Just like you said, you know, this election is not just about a good union contract, although that's very and vitally important. This election is about the very democracy, in my opinion, of America, because that's exactly, you will not see America the same again if we don't elect the right person for president. If Joe Biden is not elected for president and Donald Trump is, in my opinion, America will never be the same again. Democracy goes out the window because, as we saw from the last term that he was in office, we saw people that were solely dedicated to him, not to the Constitution of the United States, not to the people of America, but to him. And that's what I fear. If he's ever elected again to the presidency of the United States of America, America will never, ever be the same.
Yeah, well, your union is the cautionary tale, I think, in this. Because if I remember right, during the Trump years, they did everything they could do to neuter your ability to represent your members. It did everything in they did their foolhardy best to silence any opposition. And, you know, taking away, grievance time, taking away office space, taking away all of the infrastructure that is there to have a collective bargaining agreement and to have it enforced. So that seems like, to me, potentially a walk in the park for what they've got planned. Do your members remember this? Are you back reemphasizing how devastating that stuff was? And what kind of responses are you getting?
Well, I certainly remember that, okay? I mean, and it's a nightmare, right, that they don't want to relive, okay? Because, like you said, you know, representatives were kicked out of their offices. You know, they were told they couldn't represent their members. You know, all of these types of things that was occurring. And we are alerting, you know, our membership right now that if we are not proactive in this election, you know, we could end up back in a situation even worse than what we saw then. Because I think that it would be worse because these guys already did the trial and error, okay? They're ready to move. They're ready to move on day one. And so we just have to work hard and be vigilant to make sure that this election is indeed the most important election that union members and America will ever vote in for the sanctity of our country. I truly believe that, Rick.
No, I absolutely agree with you. You know, over these next 6 months, what is the message AFGE is putting out to their members? You know, how are you going about reaching them? I mean, we're still spread out because of the pandemic. A lot of people still working from home. You know, are we finding messaging a little difficult? Are we finding getting people a little difficult?